910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Not only is power out to tens of thousands and streets flooded, these storms in the Houston area yanked streetlights off utility poles. Cars were crushed by trees and poles. Windows fell out of downtown buildings. A second straight night of drone attacks in Crimea, the part of Ukraine seized by Russia a few years ago, is going on, say local Telegram social media, and some government personnel. The owner and three workers of a daycare in Manchester, New Hampshire, are facing child endangerment charges. Police accuse them of sprinkling the sleep aid melatonin on children's lunches.
They don't know how these children may react to it. They don't know if they have an allergic reaction or even worse.
Police spokeswoman Heather Hamill. Three North Korean workers and a U.S. citizen are charged with what the Justice Department calls staggering fraud, allegedly with a scheme to secure telephone work with U.S. companies and government agencies. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Vice President Kamala Harris back in Wisconsin Thursday. She spoke to black voters in Milwaukee about the administration's efforts to create economic opportunity.
You see the signs around Milwaukee and around our country brought to you by the Biden-Harris administration, and you see a crane and you see shovels in the ground.
Harris also talked about forgiving student loan and medical debt and improving access to housing. The Green Bay Packers will play at least five games on national primetime TV this football season. The NFL released its regular season schedule Wednesday night. The Packers will open the season with a game in Sao Paulo, Brazil on Friday, September 6th, and they'll host a game on Thanksgiving night. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Progressive presents 10 things on a contractor's to-do list that are harder than getting a commercial auto insurance quote. Bidding a new client, giving an accurate estimate, finding affordable materials, getting a client to pay you for work you already did, getting a client to pay you, period, securing permits and workers and tools, getting those workers and tools to work together, and finding the perfect pair of overalls. Pockets, baby. But the easiest thing on a small business owner's to-do list? Seeing if you can save on commercial auto insurance. Get a quote in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Coverage subject to policy terms and conditions.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. We now find out that Donald Trump wasn't sleeping. Trump wasn't sleeping during the trials. No, he's not. And look, maybe I was wrong. I thought maybe someone might be drugging him to keep his mouth shut. No, evidently, according to Jesse Waters at Fox News, he's not sleeping. He's meditating. Yeah, he's in a meditative state, evidently. Because Jesse Waters says, when you're defensive about something, you avoid something. Trump's not defensive of being old and tired, you know, like that Joe Biden. And I found it interesting that this is the path. This is the argument that they're going to make. No, he's not sleeping. He's just meditating. And the thing that gets me, and what makes me think of the Fox News and all of the stories that keep coming out, and the hope of this election cycle, is that we'll remember just how bad Donald Trump was, how horrible his handling of our government was during his tenure. Now, I go back to, January 20th, 2017, and I remember coming on the show going, it's going to be bad. The next 4 years, going to be bad, especially for working people. You're going to get hammered at every turn. Every government regulatory agency is going to be your enemy because they're going to put the worst people in charge of it. And right out of the gate, and I remember, going, you know, to me, the Department of Labor is kind of a big deal because they're the folks who oversee some of our labor law, want to make sure that workers get a fair shot. They, Trump's first guy out of the bag was, you know, the Carl's Jr. CEO, Andy Puzder, I guess his name was, who was really an embarrassment to Trump and understand, was going to be horrible for workers. I was one of those guys who said, you know, if they ask for too much in the fast food thing, we're just going to automate. And Carl's Jr. was moving forward with a fully automated, restaurant so that, you know, you didn't have to have those pesky, you know, people. And the thing is, do you want someone like that as the head of the Department of Labor? I didn't. And I was, you know, I was pretty vocal about it. But I guess it wasn't really until, and I remember this, Trump's first pick for labor secretary was evidently so bad, so cruel to his spouse that she made an appearance on the Oprah Winfrey show in disguise and talked about, you know, how abusive he was in disguise because, you know, you can't come out now. He moved along, you know, he dropped out because he knew it wasn't going to happen. But you still got the worst people. You know, Eugene Scalia, who was a union buster. Alex Acosta, who was, he was the guy who gave Jeffrey Epstein the sweetheart deal that kept him out of prison when he was a U.S. attorney for the southern part of Florida. But again, you know, raping underage children, yeah, we can pass that along. These are the people that Trump put into positions of power. And you look at who Joe Biden's put into these positions. Julie Sue, who spent her life advocating for workers, fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, empowerment for working people, wanting to use that agency to better the lives of working families. This is one of those things, which side are you on? And it's always going to be the push-pull between capital and labor. Understand that. Republicans have always been on the side of capital. Democrats, for the most part, have been on the side of labor. Joe Biden on the side of labor. You know, there's a lot of things that were done in the past that you go, well, that wasn't so great for working people. And I agree. I beat up Bill Clinton during his years for being not so great. Obama could have done a whole lot more. But I got to tell you, the Biden people are doing a fabulous job. We want to keep this. Because understand, we're going to get pitted, you know, Biden against Trump, and it's going to be red hat versus blue hat. And that's what that's the horse race they're going to show us. That's the three-card Monty game that they're going to put in front of us without talking about all of the other stuff. You know, I was remembering Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, who really, I mean, the reporting throughout her tenure was that she was abusing her office to help her father's Chinese shipping business because she was rich. You know, Mitch McConnell's wife, loaded because of this family business. You go to Energy Secretary Rick Perry, who, just doing some favors for some friends in the energy sector. Not you, not me, not working people, certainly not the environment. There were a number more. I mean, Ryan Zinke, the Interior Secretary, he did some really weird stuff. I think he rode his horse to work, but spent money like crazy. New doors, desks, pens, all kinds of craziness. Tax dollars be damned. And then there was Scott Pruitt, who's the EPA head. Now, both Pruitt and Zinke, you know, resigned in disgrace. As most of the Trump people did, or if they didn't resign in disgrace, they got thrown under the bus by Trump. It's easy to forget what his administration was like. It was pure chaos. But we're being sold in this moment. We're being sold on the idea that it was so much better 4 years ago. No, it wasn't. We were in lockdown because they bungled handling of COVID. There's no getting away from that. And every time someone like Katie Britt goes, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? The answer is, yeah, a lot better. Are there problems? Most certainly. There are things that need to be addressed. And I think this administration is doing that. But here's the problem. None of that stuff's getting through. Now, I was recently quoted in an article in the Hill. And I said, look, you know, Democrats got a pretty good message. They got a good message. They just don't have a delivery vehicle. They can't break through the Trump noise. The trial and all of the chaos and, oh, the pilgrimages by Republican politicians who all dress in cute little outfits to look just like Trump. Oh, it's so cute. It's adorable if you think about it. They all dress in the same kind of suit with a red tie. So let's get out there for the picture. So dear leader, we'll see that they were loyal. And the question you've got to ask, who are all of these people loyal to? They're loyal to Donald Trump. Do you know who they're not loyal to? You, to the working people of this country who build this country. The reason I think, look, Biden wasn't my first choice, and I've said this a bunch. He has done leaps and bounds more than I thought he would ever do. And in my view, most certainly, without question, has earned a second term. If for nothing else, to keep the good people in place who are doing the work that needs to be done of our government. People who believe in the mission that they're setting out to do, as opposed to 4 years ago, the list of disgraces that held those offices. I got to tell you, this is one of those easy choices to decide which side you're on. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as you know, I've been talking about the National Labor Relations Board and how, you know, day one of the Biden administration, him firing Peter Robb, was for me well worth the vote, well worth the activism to get Biden elected. And understand, the people that he has put in the positions of power at the NLRB, the Department of Labor, the Federal Trade Commission, the Department of Labor, the Department of Justice, you know, all people who are doing good work. And this is one of those moments where you go, we can get into the horse race of which guy, you know, which guy we're going to vote for. But understand, it's more than just red hat, blue hat. It's who's going to be doing the work. And I love the fact that our friends over at the Economic Policy Institute came out with a new study it's called the Biden Board, how President Biden's NLRB appointees are restoring and supporting workers' rights. That's why I've asked one of the authors to come talk with us. She's a senior fellow there and, of course, the co-author of the report, Lynn Reinhart. Lynn, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, you know, I look at this and I got to tell you, for me, the NLRB is, as a labor guy, you know, one of those bellwethers of your presidency. Do you stand with workers or are you going to be attacking workers? And as I've been saying for years, you know, Republicans are always attacking and Democrats are sometimes helpful. In my view, this administration, the best of my lifetime. And I think your report kind of highlights some of that.
Well, yes, we wanted to. So a few years ago, the Economic Policy Institute did a report on the Trump administration's appointees to the National Labor Relations Board and what they were doing. And we found that systematically, the management lawyers that President Trump had appointed to the National Labor Relations Board were rolling back workers' rights and giving more power to corporations in the process. And that, in fact, the Chamber of Commerce was 10 for 10 on its wish list for the Trump NLRB. So we said, okay, well, let's take a look and see how the Biden appointees to the NLRB are doing in both undoing the damage wrought by the Trump board and also trying to take additional action to promote and restore workers' rights under labor law. And that's what the report is about. And we found that that President Biden's appointees to the board, who are worker rights advocates, they have careers in workers' rights, have done a great deal to undo the damage of the prior board and to take additional steps to promote workers' rights to organize and collectively bargain, which are the rights that our federal law is designed to protect. So they're doing a much better job protecting workers' rights.
No, and I'm thrilled with what they're doing. And as I've said before, Jennifer Abruzzo, the general counsel there, has far exceeded my wildest expectations of what I would expect out of an administration's appointments to that agency, and doing things that I think are returning our government and that body to the original intent, which is to promote collective bargaining, to promote workers and employers to come together and solve solutions without having to pass legislation or get government involved. Seems to me the right move.
Absolutely. General Counsel Abruzzo has done a great job getting this agency back on the map and getting the rights protected by this agency on the map and out there. She's undertaken a number of outreach initiatives to make sure that more workers are aware of their organizing and bargaining rights. And she's shown that she's dead serious about enforcing this law within the limits of the law. Let's be real, this is a very weak law. And the tools available to the appointees to enforce this law are very limited, including, for example, that there are literally no monetary penalties for breaking labor law.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But that's not something that the NLRB appointees can do anything about, but they've done the most they can with what they've got, including trying to really strengthen the remedies for workers who are harmed by employers breaking the law. So I agree. She and her team have done a terrific job just really being very serious about enforcement of the law. And, I think it really sends a very important message to working people that this administration supports workers' rights to organize, and the labor law agency that enforces those rights has their back.
You know, you brought up an interesting point, and something I talk about quite often. Our laws are so badly outdated and have been, chipped away at death of 1,000 paper cuts over the last, 85 plus years since the NLRA was passed. The fact that there aren't any teeth in the dog, the fact that it would, and what I've been saying is for a union busting law firm or a union buster, it would be political malpractice. It would be malpractice to not tell an employer to fire people, to break the law, because there aren't any teeth. And this is why we do need major comprehensive labor law reform to meet the needs of the 21st century.
Without a doubt. I mean, there's a standard playbook that employers follow if they want to fight an organizing drive among their workers. They'll campaign against the union. They'll hire these third party union busters and bring them in to campaign against the union. Then when workers actually vote to organize, which they are doing in very high rates these days, the union win rate right now is higher than it's been in a long time because there's so much pent up demand among working people to have a voice on the job and to form a union. So when workers organize, then employers will stall the collective bargaining process and stall reaching a first agreement, which is, of course, the reason why workers organize in the first place is they want a collective bargaining agreement that really solidifies their rights and protections on the job. So if the employer can string out the process and stall that, then workers get frustrated and they think, well, what's this union for anyway? Why did I vote for the union? When in fact, and that's the playbook. Employers, they do it over and over again to try to undermine the union and make it seem like it's not worthwhile. And then at the end of the day, if they broke the law in doing some of that, there's no penalties. They might have to put up a poster that says, we broke the law and we won't do it again.
Yeah. Until the next time, of course.
Right.
We promise not to do it again.
What law doesn't have financial penalties for breaking the law? I happen to have a letter to myself that notifies me that I did something wrong at a stop sign in my neighborhood. And there's a penalty attached, but not for breaking labor law.
Yeah, no. And that tells you just, you know, how badly our laws have been written on the side of corporate interest. And even with that, as bad as it was, we still saw during my grandparents' generation massive organizing going on. And as I said, look, my grandparents came back from fighting World War II, fought fascism overseas, and came home and built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity. And they did that with the tool of joining and forming unions. And so I look at where we are today. Inflation's high. People are struggling to make ends meet. Rents are high. All of this stuff. The tool still valid, still good. Just have to dust it off a little bit and get it moving.
Absolutely. And working people agree with what you just said. And we see that. We see that on the streets. We see that in the polls. We see that in the increase in election petitions that have been filed at the National Labor Relations Board. Workers want unions, and particularly young workers want unions. One of the things we looked at in our EPI report was the fact that the Trump board was on the verge of finalizing a rule that was going to say student workers who work in cafeterias and are research assistants and all of that, student workers did not have rights under labor law. They were going to basically take away those rights. Since the Biden administration came in, more than 45,000 student workers have organized unions, and there's more, you know, coming every day. And I think that's just it's an illustration of the pent up desire on the part of working people to have a collective voice on the job. And frankly, the damage that was on the verge of being done by the Trump administration that was undone by President Biden's appointees.
Let me ask you, because you brought up a minute ago that, you know, during the Trump era, the Chamber of Commerce got, you know, 10 out of 10 on their wet dream list. Have we undone most of those? I mean, you know, because look, a lot of it, you know, the joint employer rule is one of those things that I go, you know, at some point we've got to break up this idea that we can franchise a name and have no oversight of how the workforce is treated. Seems insane to me. But, you know, during the Trump years, no, you're all individuals. Have we undone some of that damage or most of it?
The President Biden's appointees to the NLRB have undone much of the damage. There's still work to do. There are a couple of areas where the bad decisions that the Trump board did along the lines of what the chamber was looking for still stand. For example, the Trump board said that employers could deny workers the use of the company email to talk about union matters, even if the company email was used to talk about everything else, like the Girl Scouts and cookies and everything else, but that it was okay for employers to say, but you can't talk about the union.
Yeah.
So that decision still stands, and it has not yet been undone, and it needs to get undone. It's a good example of something that would really help facilitate workers' ability to exercise their rights. I'm guessing that, well, anyhow, but the vast majority of the damage done has been reversed. And these appointees have even gone beyond to try to take some additional actions to promote and support workers' rights to organize.
Well, I got to tell you, the pendulum
in the remedies area.
Yeah, the pendulum has got to come back a long way, because we were talking decades of assault on workers' rights going back to Reagan and Bush and Trump, and you know, all of the assaults have accumulated to where the pendulum has gone way to the side of corporate interest. It's now hopefully time to go back. But one of the things I did want to ask is, you know, I've been a steward, you know, for years in the past. And one of the things that the Trump era, they brought up was, you know, as a steward, if you're defending someone, arguing their grievance or you know, being involved in a situation where you're representing your members, you had to be nice. And I got to tell you, there have been a time or two where I've raised my voice and maybe have used some colorful language. But under that, I could have been fired for insubordination. I could have been fired for using off-color language where, you know, for me, the idea of a steward and management being somewhere on the same plane is how you get things done. Again, it's that tilting of the balance of power back to the employer and away from working people.
Yes. And, you know, it drives me a little bit crazy when people talk about flip-flopping and talk about what this board has done as just being flip-flopping, because they've changed direction in terms of how they're articulating the law. But we need to keep in mind that the purpose of this law, Congress set up this law to protect and advance workers' rights to organize. They didn't. So it's got a point of view. You know, there's a perspective built into this law.
Yep.
And that is the mandate that these appointees are charged with enforcing. And so, you know, to the extent they're taking action that supports and defends and encourages workers exercising their rights under this law, then that's what they should be doing. And so it's not just flip-flop. It's, in my view, and, you know, there's a group of people who are actually trying to effectuate what this law is supposed to be about. And then there are other people who are kind of disregarding what this law is supposed to be about and taking it in the wrong direction and favoring employers interfering with workers' rights.
Yeah, for me, it comes back to the old which side are you on argument. We've seen what the Trump era brought us. We've seen what Biden is doing. And look, as you pointed out, Biden has put experienced worker advocates in these positions who are looking after the interests of working people. They've advanced the NLRB's mission of encouraging collective bargaining. It's all good stuff. But the problem is, and this is the sad reality, it comes down to some money. The budgeting isn't there. And this is where I think Republicans have done a very smart thing is, you know, it's that Grover Norquist. I want to drag him into the bathtub and drown him in the bathtub. We need to starve the beast. And they've done that over the years.
They absolutely have. This agency has been flat funded for years. President Biden actually got the largest funding increase for the NLRB in, I think, 10 years. They got a $25 million increase a couple years ago, which was a big deal because they were going to have to furlough people and take other action. And they were able to avoid some of those problematic actions because of this budget increase. But the fact is that they are really underfunded relative to their mission. This is an agency that's supposed to protect the organizing and bargaining rights of 100 million workers. And their annual budget is $300 million a year.
Wow.
You know, the FTC gets a lot more than that. Other agencies get a lot more than that. So that they really need more money to be able to effectively do their job. And at the same time, you know, we see these actions by certain employers to try to drain the NLRB's resources by making them spend money on things like legal challenges to the agency's constitutionality that are issues and claims that have been settled for decades. And I'm referring there to Elon Musk and the SpaceX case, you know, to try to get the NLRB declared unconstitutional. Well, he's going to lose, but the NLRB is going to have to spend a lot of money.
Are you sure?
Involved in, he should lose.
Are you sure?
He should lose. But the point is that it drains resources away from this agency that, you know, doesn't have enough resources to begin with. And I think that that's actually, I think it's ideological, but I also think it's tactical.
No, absolutely. And look, you know, corporate America has figured out the way you harm unions is by making them spin their wheels and spend money defending themselves instead of going out and doing more organizing. They're having to defend what they've got. But, you know, I do want to go back a second since you brought up the Elon Musk, Trader Joe's, Amazon suit to try and get the NLRA ruled unconstitutional. I fear this Supreme Court, and this is another one of those moments, and you don't have to come here with me, but this is why elections have consequences and why they matter. We've now got a Supreme Court that is insane, and there is no decided law. John Roberts said he was going to call balls and strikes. I just don't know what game he's playing when he's calling balls and strikes, because they're undoing decided law, decades old decided law, and I fear this takes us back to the days of Lochner, and this takes us back to, you know, liberty of contract, and you're if you're willing to work in desperate conditions for poverty wages, it's your right. I fear this court more than anything. But last question I've got for you, because, you know, again, this is one of those the facts are in front of us. You're looking at the two reports. Are you guys going to put these together so folks can go, look, you know, here's a place where this is this issue, this is this issue, this is what each of them had, and now you decide which side you're on? Because I think that's important. I think a lot of my union brothers and sisters think that Trump was actually very good for labor, when the reality, 10 out of 10 for the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, if folks want to take a look at the report, they can find it at epi.org, which is our website. And there are a couple of charts, and the chart does it basically says, what is the issue? What was the record under the Trump board? What has the Biden board done? And so people can go line by line, issue by issue, and see the contrast between the management lawyers that President Trump appointed to the NLRB and the workers' rights advocates, including, I might add, the first Black woman ever to serve on the NLRB, who was appointed by President Biden. So it's all there in the report on the Biden board that's at the EPI website.
There you go. We'll get links out on how you can take a look at the Biden board. And actually, we're going to go find that Trump report and get folks the ability to put those side by side so you can make your choice up for yourself. Decide which side you are on. But Lynn, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Great report. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Lynn Reinhart, senior fellow there at the Economic Policy Institute. Again, take a look at the Biden board. We'll get links out. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. In the overnight, a partly cloudy sky as lows bottom out in the lower to middle 40s. We'll have light winds, and because of that, could see a little patchy fog to start your Friday. Otherwise, we'll have mostly sunny skies, increasing south winds. Highs will top out in the upper 70s. Currently 49 degrees.
Matt Nair on air.
Dr. Karen Tamarius, she's a political psychiatrist, and we're talking about how to talk to people with which we do not agree.
Think of the mind as a rider on an elephant. The conscious part is the rider, and the emotional part is the elephant. If you want the person to change their mind, you need to talk with the elephant, not the rider.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So over the weekend, you had the Culinary and Bartenders Union. They led their 700-plus members and hospitality workers out onto the picket line as they continue to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, and a new five-year contract at Virgin Las Vegas. And this was a planned 48-hour strike. The idea was to get out there. Started on Friday, May 10th, 5 a.m. It's now over, and we'll see what happens out of this. As I've said before, you know, strikes are one of those things that nobody really wants to do, but sometimes you need to shock the system a bit. And we'll see what happens. That's why I've asked Lee McNamara to come talk with us. Lee is a lead cook at the Virgin Hotel Las Vegas, and he's been a culinary union member for the last 24 years. Lee, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, no problem. Good to be here.
So what? Tell me, what led to you guys on Friday hitting the picket lines?
Well, you know, nobody wants to strike, but it was necessary to get that Las Vegas package that the rest of Las Vegas has. You know, every other casino has a contract and they've been signed, and we're the last union hotel to, you know, still fighting for a contract for better wages and, you know, the Las Vegas package. And, you know, it's not fair that we got left behind. So we're struggling and fighting over here to get that for you know, myself and my fellow co-workers.
Now, look, you know, I talked to a number of people over the last year or so who, like you, were fighting for good contracts in that area, saying, look, you know, we come out of the pandemic, inflation goes through the roof. We were told we were frontline heroes, we were essential, all of this stuff. How about rewarding us as such? Is that the sentiment that you and your members have?
Exactly, yes. You know, we work hard and we deserve fair compensation for the amount of work that we do. You know, they can't do it without us and we can't do it without them. So they need to step up and do the right thing and give us that contract.
Now, it seems to me, you know, I was doing a little bit of reading. It seems like the Virgin Hotel there in Las Vegas, fairly profitable. They've got the money. It's not like you're asking for something that would put them out of business. You're just asking for dignity and respect.
We're just asking for what everybody else already has, you know, what they got. it's not that much more. I mean, it's basically a cost of living increase. As you say, you know, the cost of everything is just, it's higher than it's ever been before in all aspects of life, food, gas, you know, car insurance, rent. Oh my God, rent is just up there, you know. I mean, it's hard to live on, you know, last year's wages, so to speak.
Yeah, or pre-pandemic wages, because when was the last time your contract was negotiated?
It was negotiated 5 years ago, just prior to the pandemic.
So you're living on pre-pandemic wages, and you know, there's been a massive increase. And I got to assume that you want to catch up to the standard of living that you had prior to the pandemic, because look, if your work isn't going to allow you to keep a roof over your head and food on the table, maybe you do something else, and these companies don't get to abuse your labor.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, on Friday when you guys hit the picket line, you know, walk me through what that experience was like.
Well, it was very surreal. I mean, I came out to the picket line at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, so everything was in full swing. You know, it was really good to see a lot of my coworkers, you know, my family out there, you know, because I've worked with these guys and girls for, you know, 24 years. I mean, some of them I've worked with the entire time I've been here. So, you know, it's like a family. And to see everybody out there, you know, supporting each other and supporting me, it was a tremendous feeling, you know, of family and just like, you know, just love. You know, I mean, it was difficult at the same time to be there, but to see everybody there, just, you know, because every zig we were chanting, we were getting our message out there. We were showing the company that we were here, you know, that we're not going to take it anymore. And that was the big message. And that was the most important message.
So let me ask you, though, you said you've been there 24 years. It's been 22 years, I guess, since. This is the first strike in 22 years, I guess, there. You know, what's that like? Because you talk about, you know, this is a family. You've helped build this company. So I can't imagine that this was something that you took lightly, that was easy to decide, because you put your heart and soul into this company. So I got to imagine there's some feelings there, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a, you know, like I said, it's like my home. You know, I have raised my children here. I mean, my older children know nothing other than, you know, because before this, it was the Hard Rock. You know, I brought my kids. I mean, my son was 2 when I started working here. You know, he's been to every Christmas party, you know, any family event that we've done over the years. I mean, that's all he's known, is Dad coming home from Hard Rock, or now in this case, Virgin. I mean, it's all we've ever known.
So what do you think is going to come out of this? I mean, ultimately, you had this 48-hour strike. I guess first, let me ask you, what kind of response did you get from the community? I know your members were out there. What kind of response did you get from people on the streets?
A lot of support, a lot of people honking their horns and showing support. I mean, I didn't experience any negativity whatsoever. You know, passerbys would ask, you know, why are you striking? And we would explain, you know, that we're fighting for the Las Vegas package. We're fighting for better wages, work reduction, and things of those nature. And the community was really supportive and, you know, well, good luck. And, you know, I hope you get what you deserve, because you deserve it, you know, things like that.
Well, it's what you earn. I mean, ultimately, you guys show up, you bust your butt, you do the work that brings in the revenue that makes this company profitable. So it's not a matter of deserve. It's a matter of you earn this. Your time, your effort, your energy, your work is valued. And it sounds like, you know, since we're talking about pre-pandemic wages, it sounds like there needs to be that shock to the system. So do you think this is going to help move negotiations along? And I guess the other part of this, is there a plan down the road of this happening again?
As far as this happening down in the future, I can't really comment on that at this point in time. You know, we just have to sit back and see what the company does. I mean, nobody wants that, and we're hoping that it doesn't come to that. But, you know, I'm willing to do whatever's necessary to get this contract. And, you know, so far, I believe that the company has heard our message. And I hope that they will, you know, do the right thing and move in a positive direction. towards, you know, in negotiations towards the outcome, which is a fair contract for the employees of the Virgin.
Yeah, if you had to guess, how far apart are you? I mean, you know, there's, you know, we're a handful of issues. We're completely in different planets. I don't want you to give me details and, you know, inside baseball stuff. But, you know, if you had to guess, you know, where are we in the world of, you know, we're close on some things. We're just completely worlds apart. I'm curious.
We've solved some of the issues, but the majority of the issues that we have not solved or we're working towards a solution on is, of course, obviously the economics. But, you know, I mean, these things take time, patience. You know, we still have a long way to go, but, you know, I feel that we're heading in the right direction. But, you know,
and
these
resolve.
Things take time.
Yeah, ultimately resolve. And your 700 plus members, you know, their solidarity, their standing together, that's ultimately going to be, I think, what helps get you over the hurdle. So in looking at where you are, how many of your members were out there on the line? Did you have a good showing?
Yes, we did. We had a remarkable showing. It made me super proud of everybody that was there. As it turned out, when the numbers were in, you know, we had a 97%. You know, it was higher than 97%, and that, you know, that is a tremendous outcome. That blew my mind.
That's a message.
It really did.
What that is that's a message.
yes, exactly.
You know,
the company can't help but hear.
Yeah, no.
And see.
So what can folks do to help? I mean, obviously you want people who are going to go to Las Vegas, who are going to patronize your restaurant, who are going to, you know, show up and stay there. What can folks do to help push this along? Because, look, I think, at least I hope we're in a moment where all working people are pulling for each other. We want you to do better because we know when you do better, we're going to do better. What can folks do to help?
Just support their unions and support their workers. And, you know, when there's a picket line or there's a strike, please, most importantly, do not cross that picket line.
Did you have anyone cross the picket line? There were some reports, and I don't know if you know about it or not, but one of the Jenners, I don't know who they are, Caitlin or whatever, not Caitlin, the daughters, evidently crossed the picket line. There were some reports of that. But did you have anybody crossing the picket line that you knew of?
I mean, there were some customers, obviously, that crossed the picket line and whatnot. And in any situation, I mean, there are going to be some people, whether through ignorance or just, you know, they don't understand the situation or, you know, they're going to do it. I mean, you know, they're there, they're having a vacation and, you know, it's kind of a nuisance to them. But, you know, it does happen. And, you know, we booed some of them and, you know, it's just one of those things you have to deal with and not let it get to you.
Yeah. No, I wish you guys the absolute best. I hope that that you get back to the table. I understand you're back at the table now and that you guys resolve this. As I've said in the past, nobody wants to strike. Sometimes it shocks the system. So hopefully this is the shock you guys need.
Exactly.
Lee, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Best of luck, brother. One day longer, one day stronger.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Lee McNamara, lead cook there at the Virgin Hotel in Las Vegas, culinary union member for the last 24 years. And look, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we need to see all across the country. People saying, you know what? My time, my effort, my blood, sweat, and tears should be valued and respected. And how do we value and respect it? By getting people better wages, hours, conditions. My thoughts. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1979. That was the day we lost one of the giants of the U.S. labor movement, A. Philip Randolph. A. Philip Randolph spent his life working for black workers and the cause of labor. He organized the first national black union to be recognized by the American Federation of Labor, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. The fight for union recognition took 12 years. and the Porters signed their first contract in 1937. Randolph went on to lead the effort to desegregate war industries and armed services during and after World War II. He was one of the leading organizers of the 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, one of the most memorable actions of the civil rights movement. He also worked tirelessly to break down discrimination within the labor movement. He was elected the first black vice president of the AFL-CIO in 1955. Randolph's dedication to the cause of labor was summed up when he said, quote, "The essence of trade unionism is social uplift. The labor movement has been the haven for the dispossessed, the despised, the neglected, the downtrodden, the poor." But Randolph also consistently declared that no movement for social justice can be complete unless it is also inclusive. While organizing for the desegregation of the war industries during World War II, Phillips argued, quote, "Equality is the heart and essence of democracy. Freedom and justice, equality of opportunity in industry, in labor unions, schools and colleges, government, politics, and before the law. There must be no dual standard of justice, no dual rights, privileges, duties, or responsibilities of citizenship. No dual forms of freedom." Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So it's been 4 years since Jeff Bezos said that Amazon would become the Earth's best employer. And the folks over at the Center for Urban Economic Development at the University of Illinois Chicago have a new report out called Handling Hardship, where they quote Bezos here saying that Earth's best employer. So they went and they looked, you know, how's he doing? How's this working over at the Amazon? And what they found, not shocking, over the last 3 months, 53% of Amazon employees who were surveyed experienced food insecurity, 48% experienced housing insecurity, 56% haven't been able to pay all of their bills. A third of all of the workers polled have had to use one or more publicly funded assistance programs, you know, food stamps, LIHEAP, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And look, you know, they point out that taking time off for health impact reasons are also linked with greater economic insecurity. And you go, but what about that best employer thing? What about the world's best employer? And the reason that I keep saying that we need to organize and unionize this workplace is, again, I go back to what I said the other day. It's about opening up the books. There's a lot of wealth being created there, an enormous amount of wealth that the people who make it possible aren't getting to share it. And this is where you go, we need to be taxing billionaires at higher rates. We need to be taxing corporate America at higher rates. And what's interesting is I've been seeing a lot of social media posts going, you just can't tax billionaires. It's not going to solve our problem. Yeah, it kind of does. Because the incentive to raise prices well beyond what you need to, which causes massive inflation, the reward in doing that is you get to keep more of that money. So the more profits you're making, the higher prices you get to charge, the more of that you get to keep. And also, yeah, you're not going to be able to take all the billionaire money and solve our problems. But if you take some of that, the wealth being created by working people, and it actually goes to the working people who create it, then there's a reverberation effect where they spend it in other businesses, and then they spend it in other businesses, and there's a snowball effect where it grows. We used to do this. We used to understand it, but not so much anymore. So I look at what we see on social media and do deference to the wealth class, because understand who's paying for this content. The wealth class, they know how to spend money to get a good return on investment. They've got the best tax code money can buy. And understand, they did buy it. So for me, we're in a moment where we as working people have to figure out that age-old question, which side are you on? Are you on the side of, yes, we should have billionaires who the hardest day's work they do is moving money from one pocket to the other? Or we should have a prosperous working class where people have disposable income to be able to participate in an economy that is growing from the bottom up, so that we can take a day off to go see our kids play baseball, or if our kids are sick, take a day off to be able to spend time with them. Or, I don't know, maybe just every once in a while, take a day off for self-mental preservation. But that's not where corporate America wants us. They want us desperate on the treadmill, constantly trying to keep up, trying not to fall too far behind, and yet we keep falling behind. And there's real anger out here. And this is where, you know, I hope the Biden administration is seeing this and addresses it in the right ways. But here's the thing. And this is where I've seen some interesting, and I wanted to play some of them, but the profanity was just way, way too much to edit out. You wouldn't understood anything without the profanity. But they're going after Biden for fear, not going out in the front of the microphone and calling this stuff out. And the question is, would anyone listen? Would our mainstream corporate-controlled media report on it? Or would they screw it up? For instance, New York Times had a... This is one of those things that just makes me go, what is wrong with our media? Oh, yeah, it's all about the clicks. It's all about the money. It's all about the horse race. It's all about, you know, fake bipartisanship. But the New York Times... The headline, 17% of voters blame Biden for the end of Roe. What? And look, this is one of the questions in the poll that they were conducting, which is why, again, I don't put any faith in any of the polling that's done, because it's all done dishonest. Just asking this question makes people think that it's possible. Wow, it is possible. No, it's not possible. Biden did not have anything to do with the Supreme Court overturning Roe. If any former president did, it would have been Donald Trump with his three court appointments. But no, we need that both sides-ism. And what's frustrating to me is you get these kind of answers when you do these polls where you think, well, we don't know what the answer is. You know, it's an open question. We don't know. Let's see what the American people think that they might know. It's not an open question. This is where journalists need to go, no, wait a second. No one should believe this because it's not true. The caveat should be, hey, if someone goes, I think Joe Biden did, you go, no, stupid. It's not. You are wrong. Now, understand, there are two kinds of people in this situation who would answer this question this way. There's really the truly uninformed who go, well, you know, it happened during Biden's years, so he's got to be responsible for it. Which at which point, as a journalist, you go, no, that's not how it works. This is what happened. This is how it works. And you educate, you inform. And then there's the other person who's just screwing around. There's the red hat who everything's Biden's fault. Doesn't matter if he did it or not. It's Biden's fault. It rained today. Biden's fault. You know, the grass is wet. Biden's fault. I get that. But to have a headline, 17% of voters blame Biden for the end of Roe, you go, no, no, you shouldn't be doing that. Not at all. It's wrong. And the thing that gets me is there's so much out there that we should be talking about. Seriously, especially on the Roe issue. For instance, you know, right before Mother's Day, you had Katie Britt, the Republican senator from Alabama, who came forth with her More Opportunities for Moms to Succeed Act, which is evidently the goal of this Moms Act is to establish a database, a government, an online government database, pregnancy.gov. And it's supposed to be all information on on pregnancy. You know, everything related to pregnancy. Not abortion, though. No, can't do that. Adoption, you know, pregnancy care providers, all that stuff. All kinds of stuff. Now, the interesting thing is, if you go on there and you sign up with the username and you give them their information, are you not collecting data on people who are pregnant? Are you not collecting data on pregnant women? And isn't this an invasion of their privacy? Now, my mind goes to this place of, can you imagine if, you know, if Democrats say, hey, we're going to have guns.org or guns.gov, and you could come in, you know, and register your guns. Can you imagine how the right would lose their minds? But no, we're going to create a platform where, you know, we're going to direct people to set up, you know, accounts, personal data, contact information, all that stuff. Now, they assure us it's never going to be used, except when you read the website actually says that they're going to collect the information. And this is the part that is kind of scary to me. Because understand, I agree with some of the right-wing fear of overreaching government. I am distrustful of government like everyone else. I believe in a government of, for, and by we the people, much more than we the corporations or a privatized government. I'm going to always side with us, you and me. That said, I do have some distrust in us to not be taken over by some interesting ideas. And just as the right is fearing social credit scores and all of that stuff, which I agree, we should not go anywhere near. They're okay with collecting, you know, women's cycle data. They're okay with, you know, as long as we're in the bedroom making sure you don't do anything we don't agree with. It's quite scary. And that's why, again, we're in a moment where we need a news media that is going to give us honest information, not, well, we didn't know. We were just curious what people thought. And we put out this headline that, you know, we didn't know. You knew. Now, evidently there might be debates. I guess Biden asked for two. There's going to be one. They keep saying, you know, mark your calendars because there's going to be a debate sometime in June. And I don't think, you know, June 27th on CNN is evidently when this is supposed to happen. I don't think it's going to. I don't. I think Trump's already begun walking back saying, no, I want a Fox debate. And, you know, I don't see Fox as a serious news outlet. So I don't think that's where it will be. So I don't know. Everyone said, hey, it could happen, might not happen. But to be honest, I don't care because they've both got records. We know what Trump did as president. It wasn't good. We know what Biden has been doing. It's moving us in the right direction. We're reshoring manufacturing. We're investing in infrastructure. We're rebuilding the heartland of America. We're making places that used to be, we're making them the places that are going to be. That investment takes time. You don't just flip on the switch. But we have a mainstream corporate-controlled media that needs this to be a horse race. They need to keep feeding, I'm not going to say disinformation, I'll say misinformation. Because again, we're just asking the question. So as a voter, when you see this, we must repel from what our mainstream corporate-controlled media is trying to feed us, which is that this is an actual race. It's not. They've got records, and Trump's is bad for working people. It's good for corporations, good for rich people. If you're in that camp, I fully get it. If you're a millionaire, you're a billionaire, you own a big corporation, I get why you're voting for Trump. But if you work for a living, you punch a clock, you work paycheck to paycheck, and that check isn't going far, Trump, not your guy. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Grab the podcast. Freespeech.org for the video. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.